This is August 14th, 1991. I'm Ray Barichka, and I'm conducting the second interview with Judge Sullivan in his office in Detroit. Judge Sullivan, when Mayor Kavanaugh first took office, what were his views regarding the relationship between city government and state government, specifically Detroit and Lansing? Did he have specific views on what the relationship should be like?
He may have had specific views, but I can't remember him expressing any. I do recall, right after the election, that he was invited, along with myself, to call on John Swainson, who was then governor of Michigan. And Jerry took this very casually, much to my amazement. I thought that, after all, the governor's a higher office. Mm-hmm. And we were due at the governor's office at a certain hour. We arrived at least an hour late, and there were a lot of the press who were waiting there for this meeting and taking some pictures of it. And they were somewhat taken aback that Jerry treated the whole thing so casually that we would arrive late. Because I was just sort of a tag-along, and Jerry had asked me to accompany him for whatever reason. And we had a very friendly meeting with Swainson, but there's no doubt in my mind Swainson was somewhat perturbed that he, the governor, was asked to wait and the mayor. And I think that Jerry never really was too concerned about what the state officials were thinking. Mm-hmm. He felt the city was an entity unto itself, would handle its own problems, and he wasn't going to be doing things because somebody in Lansing.
So he wasn't looking toward Lansing to help with Detroit's problems at that time?
No. He did look to the federal government for help and was very successful in that area. He had excellent relations with
I want to ask you about that. Before we get into it, let me ask you just one more question about relationships with the state. The governorship, oftentimes in Michigan, is a Republican domain. Did politics play any kind of a role in the Kavanaugh administration's relationship with the Swainson administration?
Not really. Jerry was, when he would work with the legislature, particularly, was totally unconcerned whether the person was a Republican or a Democrat. Mm-hmm. He was fairly effective in dealing with the legislature up there, and he had a lot of support from Democratic legislators. Coleman Young, particularly, was very helpful. Mm-hmm. On different occasions, Jerry would ask me to go to Lansing to try to help work something through, and I would always go first to Coleman Young because mm-hmm. he was very helpful mm-hmm. to us. And there were several Republican legislators who just liked Jerry's method of running the city and all, and they too would be quite helpful. So mm-hmm. he cut across party lines mm-hmm. in that regard. He had a certain admiration for John Swainson because he thought John Swainson had a lot of guts. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he didn't feel that he, as mayor, was one in a position to defer to
a lot of guts
Swainson.
In what sense?
John Swainson?
Have to do with his physical disability? And
well, that certainly was part of it. Mm-hmm. But also, Swainson was not afraid to attempt to pass legislation that some people thought better left untried because it would be resented. I can't think of specific bills at the present time. But he urged the passage of programs that some governors before him were just thought it better to keep their hands off of those mm-hmm. things.
You mentioned that Mayor Kavanaugh focused more of his attention on Washington than he did on Lansing.
Right.
Why?
Well, the same reason Willie Sutton went to rob banks. Mm-hmm. It's where the money is.
That's where the money was.
You weren't going to get any money out of Lansing. They didn't have much money to give.
Couldn't one also think, however, that dealing with the federal bureaucracy would be much tougher than the state bureaucracy, if for no other reason because of its size?
This is something I can't say with any assurance that I'm correct, but I think Washington was much more attractive to Jerry, the atmosphere of Washington. Mm-hmm. This was the mainstream of politics. He liked to go to Washington. Uh-huh. He was frequently called to Washington to testify before Senate and House committees. Pardon. And he enjoyed that very much, and he enjoyed working with the Washington officials. Mm-hmm. And he was very effective in dealing with Washington officials. Surprisingly enough, Kennedy election, I think, gave Jerry a great opportunity, but yet the first, he didn't move right into that area. I can recall when they had a big birthday party for Kennedy, he sent me as his representative rather than go himself, which frankly surprised me at the time. Sorry. After that, though, he became a frequent visitor to Washington.
Did he have a personal relationship with President Kennedy?
Yes, but not anywhere near as close as he did with President Johnson. Mm-hmm. He also had a very close relationship with Senator Pat McNamara. Mm-hmm. And McNamara obviously was a friend of Jerry's, as Pat been. In fact, when McNamara ran for the Senate against Blair Moody, there were very few people involved in his campaign. Jerry was very involved in the campaign, and so was I, only because Jerry had got me involved in it. But we were there practically alone at the time until Blair Moody died. Then all of a sudden, there were all kinds of people involved in the campaign.
Why the lack of support?
Because Moody was the incumbent senator. He was very close to the UAW. Uh-huh. And the UAW, following Moody's death, just moved in and took over the McNamara campaign. But Jerry was always fascinated with Washington. He used to talk kiddingly about the day when he might go to Washington as an elected official. He very much desired to become a senator someday. Mm-hmm. And I think he would have made a great senator, too, because he was so articulate and also so capable of persuading people to do things. I think he would have been a tremendous senator, would have been able to really give Michigan maximum return for the kind of input he would have given to that position. But of course it was never to be. But he worked very closely, particularly with during Johnson's years. Johnson would frequently call the office and talk to Jerry. Invite him to Washington many times, invite him to the White House for dinner and things like that. And of course, as a result of his close relationship with particularly the Johnson administration, Detroit was able to receive a lot of financial help.
There's a lot of that, and once again, I don't believe you were in the administration at that point, but in terms of getting the money out of Washington, is a lot of it dependent upon the personality factors, such as the mayor getting along with the president, who
certainly
perhaps can open doors?
Oh, yeah, very definitely. Others might disagree with me, but, for example, the Pontchartrain Hotel, whether it was a good thing that was built or not, would never have been built if it wasn't for Jerry's relationship with the Johnson administration.
Can you give us any details on that?
Well, it's all so far back, I hate to try to be specific on it, but that was built, as I recall, on a, what they call a UDAG grant, and it had been turned down. And as I remember, as I say, I'm a little cautious here because I'm relying on the memory of some things many years ago. Jerry either called or in Washington spoke directly with Johnson, and the UDAG grants were done being given out at that time. They had kind of pretty much slowed down, particularly for that kind of development. And Johnson was persuaded by Jerry to intervene and tell the people who were in control of there to
Did that sort of thing happen often, to your knowledge?
I couldn't say often or not. Again, that was a period that my contact with the administration was strictly on a friendship basis because I was back practicing law or doing whatever I was doing at that time. But I would frequently visit with Jerry, and in fact on different occasions went to Washington with Jerry when he'd be going down. He'd ask me to to join him. And I would go down. I would usually, when I would go down, it was for times he was testifying, he was a senator to the House. And I never was with him to the White House, although on one occasion, during the Kennedy administration, he sent me to the White House for him. And another time, I met Johnson because of Jerry. But my contacts were very limited, that sort of thing. So I really can't give you specific detail about
that. In this period of the early 60s, particularly with the exposure that Mayor Kavanaugh was getting in Washington, he begins to get played up by the national press and becomes, I don't know what the proper term would be, but a rising star. Various writers used various descriptions of him. Was this in any way a conscious PR effort on the part of Kavanaugh and Kavanaugh people to increase his presence nationally in terms of an ultimate goal of getting to Washington, holding political office?
No. Jerry became the urban spokesman for America, I think. He was head of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and the National League of Cities. He was the first person ever elected to both those positions at the same time. And he drew a lot of media attention. Magazines no longer in existence. For example, I can remember when Collier's came in and interviewed him. A Look magazine did an interview. Life magazine did one, and among other things, featured him as one of the 100 outstanding young men in America. Many other magazines came in. Newsweek, for example, not only did an interview with him and on the mayors of America, but signaled him out as one of the outstanding mayors of the country, and did a cover with his picture on it. Henry Luce died that same time, and after a run, it was into the run, but they pulled the covers and did a picture of Luce on the covers,
right?
So Jerry lost
that.
Out. We had a stack of the covers. They sent the rest of the covers to us. I have one of them framed and hanging in my den at home. Inside in the article, I still had a picture of Jerry and a description of his abilities, and he was outstanding, and He was a tremendous mayor, and he was a strong presence in the National League of Cities and the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I was with him when he was no longer president, and Mayor Lindsay of New York had taken over, and there, too, was a national figure. Lindsay could not run that organization at all in comparison with the way Jerry had handled
it. Was it difficult to run?
Yeah, but Jerry was a master lion tamer. He really would control those sessions and could get things done. Lindsay was just overridden.
He was another one of the rising stars among the mayors at that time.
But I don't think he was ever described as one of the five best mayors in the country, and Jerry was many occasions.
That's true. Did not, speaking of fellow mayors, did not Mr. Kavanaugh also have close relations with Mayor Wagner?
Yes.
How did they happen to get to know each other so well? Any idea?
It was through a person named Julius Edelstein. Julius occupied the position of, essentially the same position I had when I was there as executive secretary. I don't know what the title was in New York. Julius was he's now at one of the City College of New York, I think it is, a brilliant individual. And I can't tell you, because I cannot recall how he and Jerry came into contact. But it was through Julius, who is still a friend of Jerry's wife, Kathy. Writes to her, calls her, and so forth. Comes here to visit on a rare occasion. Who introduced Jerry to Wagner. And they got along very, very well. In fact, one time, Wagner and Julius came here to Detroit, and the group of us got together. It was really interesting, because Wagner himself was a very interesting person.
Did Mr. Kavanaugh learn a lot from Mr. Wagner? Wagner had been in office for a while.
Well, I think he acknowledged Wagner's abilities and he admired Wagner, so yeah, I'm sure he did have influence on Jerry.
Okay. Relations with the Michigan Democratic Party. Could Mr. Kavanaugh be categorized as something of a mover and shaker within the state Democratic Party while he was mayor?
Oh, not really, although he certainly, he was a shaker in the Michigan Democratic Party, more than a mover. You see, when Jerry ran for mayor, first time against Mary Annie, the UAW supported Mary Annie, viewing Jerry as just a total upstart. And they were somewhat taken aback. I guess I better say they were in a state of shock when Jerry won, and the relationship did not start out too well because they had backed Mary Annie and they didn't like the idea of somebody running against them and then beating them. That was even worse. So they had no relationship with Jerry, and they didn't trust Jerry because they didn't know who he was or anything else about him. And they knew he wasn't one of their men. And the UAW, of course, at that time, was the dominant force in the Democratic Party. So if the UAW was suspicious of you, your relationship with the Democratic Party wasn't too good. And Jerry did not defer to the Democratic Party. He was a lifelong Democrat. He espoused the ideals of the Democratic Party probably better than the Democratic Party did itself. And the Democratic Party made one of its tragic mistakes in this state, in my opinion, by not really moving behind Jerry.
Why was that?
Well, just from the beginning, because he did not kowtow to the party and order the UAW to start all later. He developed some very fine relationships with top people in the UAW. And they were,
you mentioned Walter Reuther the
yes,
last time.
Yeah, he had a good relationship.
Was there ever any effort to, I don't want to use the term heal relations, but strengthen relations between, say, Mr. Kavanaugh and the UAW in the political realm? It seemed like, you know, the UAW being based here in Detroit, the mayor of Detroit, both of them having types of power in their own right, a marriage would seem like a natural political marriage.
I think there was a, there developed a very good relationship between Jerry and Walter Reuther, Doug Frazier, Leonard Wilcox. It certainly seemed to me that they had a very good relationship. But the thing never really gelled, because when Jerry decided to run for the Senate, and now he had established pretty good relationships with the UAW, but they weren't going to support Jerry against Tiemann and Williams. Williams had long and deep ties into the UAW, and they owed it to Williams to support him, and they tried to talk Jerry out of running, but he decided to run, as you know, and away we went. Williams had too much support out of the party, out of the UAW, and out of the common folk. And you have to remember, too, that Jerry had just a short time before had been elected mayor and had said that if he were elected mayor, he would serve out the term. He didn't put a qualification on that, and when the press faced him with that problem, he broke one of his cardinal rules. He denied having said it. Well, they had him down as having said it, and they just began to plague him with the fact that he had said he wouldn't leave office, that he'd serve out the term, which was unfortunate. He had a rule, and he said, never lie to the press. And unfortunately, maybe he forgot he had said that, or just thought it was something nobody would remember, but they remembered it too well. And I think that hurt him badly in that campaign, because throughout the thing, that was being thrown in his face constantly. It was being reprinted in the papers constantly. He said he was not going to leave until his term was finished. And so
do you think Mr. Kavanaugh made a mistake taking on Soapy Williams?
Yes.
Did you tell him so at the
yes.
time? How did he react?
Quietly. I think I would best describe it as when I told him I didn't think he could possibly win the Senate. I believe we mentioned this in the previous meeting, but I told him, you're not going to be able to carry Detroit because you're not going to be able to carry the black community. But if you can't carry Detroit, you can't carry Wayne County. You can't carry Wayne County, you can't carry the state. And the reason is, Williams has too much strength within those places. He's an old friend that they owe support. They like you, they admire you, they want to see you go ahead, but Williams is ahead of you in line. And chance for the Senate, they feel he deserves it. I honestly felt Jerry would be a much better senator than Williams, who I also happen to admire. Williams was a fine and honest and honorable man. But I think Jerry would have been just a tremendous person in the Senate. So when I said all that to him, he just sat there quietly. I think he then said, well, let's talk about it next week back in Detroit, because that conversation took place in Washington. And he said, no, let's just go to dinner. And we didn't talk about it for a while. Then we had another meeting in Detroit involving a lot of his friends and political appointees, about 20 in number. And with, I think, two exceptions, everybody at the meeting said, you can't win. And like,
you cannot win.
Cannot win. Williams is too strong. Well, one of the fellows, Cliff Sullivan, Cliff, by the fact the Irish name, had a very strong relationship in the Polish community. And he said to Jerry, the Poles are going to vote for Williams. There's just no way you're going to get a Polish vote. They're solidly behind Williams. And when that meeting was over, Jerry and I went back into his inner office. And I said, well, I think after hearing all that, that you're convinced that we ought to not try this one. And he said, no, I'll think about it some more. Well, it was a week later that he announced he was going to run.
So it was an individual, personal decision on his part against the advice of all of his counselors.
Right.
Last week, I had the opportunity to interview Mayor Cavanaugh's brother, Paul. And one thing that his brother repeatedly pointed out in the interview was that one of the predominant traits of Mr. Cavanaugh's from the time he was young on was a distinct stubbornness. Once he had decided that he was going to do something, he was tenacious about it, no matter who opposed him. Is this, of course, hindsight is always 20/20, but is this, do you think, another instance of perhaps his stubbornness clouding his judgment?
Well, I wouldn't describe it so much as stubbornness. He would analyze something, and if he felt it was the right thing, he had the courage to hang on to it in spite of a lot of advice. Usually advisors are always advocating caution.
Uh-huh.
And Jerry, if he felt something was right, was going to do it regardless. Sometimes things that he did as mayor of the city, his push for open housing, for example, his push for increased city taxes, when those things were the sort of thing that everybody said, geez, you don't want to do that. Everybody would be mad at you. He'd say, it's necessary or it's the right thing. Therefore, we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do it. He wouldn't. All the naysayers and all those who would say, everybody's going to be mad at you for doing that, that wouldn't affect him at all.
And then again, he had beat the odds makers in his first campaign and came out of nowhere and won.
That's right, and it was he had analyzed it correctly. He wasn't just jumping in there for the fun of it.
Sure.
He had said to me, I can win this election. I'm convinced I can win it. And he convinced me after a while. Not that it mattered whether he convinced me or not, but I mean, his arguments began to make a tremendous amount of sense. He just was not afraid to stand up to anybody. Maybe that's why his relationship with the UAW wasn't as good as at the start as it might have been, because he wasn't afraid to tell them what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't listening, waiting to hear what they wanted him to do. He was telling them what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the older union people, particularly on the second or third level, somewhat resented that and made for his relationships at the start a little difficult. His relationship became very good with them farther along, of course. But They didn't support him when he ran for the Senate. They didn't support him when he ran for governor. And Jerry was much maligned. It was tragic reality how people lied about him and others believed what was said. It hurt him badly. And, because he was really a fine individual. But Lou Gordon, for example, a man who, I leave him to heaven. He said an awful lot of things. He was a very popular commentator, and he said so many things that were untrue and pushed them, and people believed them. Or they'd say, well, he wouldn't say those things on the radio or television if they weren't true. That's a lot of baloney, too.
What was all of that business regarding Mr. Gordon and the guy behind the palm tree? Wasn't this supposed man behind the palm tree?
Rubber tree.
Rubber tree, wasn't man it? Behind revealed or something?
I don't think of his name. He was Secretary of the Water Commission for a short while. Langwald, Phil Langwald.
Uh-huh.
Well, he was a friend of Lou Gordon's. And Jerry found out that a lot of information was going to Gordon from the inside of the administration. And he began to suspect that Langwald was the one who was passing things on to Gordon. We'd have appointee meetings regularly. We would have a breakfast session where all the appointees would attend and various problems that would be discussed. And Gordon seemed to have information that came out of those places. As I remember, it was ultimately pinned down that Langwald was the source. Whether he admitted it after a while or whether Gordon admitted it or what, but anyway, it became an established fact that Langwald was one. And
the mayor ever confront him directly?
Oh, yes, and discharged him. The reason he was called the man behind the rubber plant, I forget who coined that expression, but he was supposedly seen lurking behind rubber plant over, I think it was in the lobby of the Book Cadillac Hotel. A conversation was going on. He was listening to it.
There was something of a crackdown on crime during Mr. Kavanaugh's first administration. Was this something he directed? It wasn't a harsh kind of a crackdown similar to what had gone on during the Mirianni administration, but there seemed to be, the newspapers at any rate talk about a certain acceleration effort on the part of the police to clean up Detroit. Was this part of a Kavanaugh administration program, or was there something else going on?
Not while I was there. I don't recall any particular effort to make a crackdown on crime. Every mayor pushes the crime problem, and crime is always a problem in the city, and every mayor sooner or later is urging the police to do more about it. I think one of the things Jerry was trying to do with the police department, and I can remember this a lot, was his efforts to get them to hire more black officers, which constantly met with resistance.
How do you explain that? There are a lot of explanations for racism in police departments.
Well, I suppose it's an unfortunate thing that in a community such as ours, going back into the 60s, that a lot of the problems the police dealt with were problems that arose in the black community. And the reaction of the police officer frequently was one that didn't exhibit an awareness of the racial problems in the racial background. And police, there's no question about it, at least at that time, police dealt more harshly with the black arrestee or suspect or what have you than they might with the average white person. And it was greatly resented in the community, and the community viewed the police officers as the enemy, I suppose, the army of occupation, what have you. And the only way you're really going to overcome that was to have more black police officers, so the force itself became more balanced. And I suppose, too, as white officers work with black officers, they would become more understanding, too, hopefully, of the black problem. Mm-hmm. But it was very difficult to get this. I can remember Jerry telling, in my presence, the head of the police department that, I'm not referring to the commissioner, I'm referring to the actual chief, that he wanted the next class to have 50% black officers lined up. Well, it didn't. I think it hit about 25%. That was their idea of really doing as the mayor told them. They just were very resistant to that sort of thing at that time.
Mm-hmm. How do they go about resisting a mayor? A mayor is supposed to be the most powerful figure in the city. How does a police department not follow the directive a mayor has given them and get away with it?
Well, I suppose there are lots of ways. They can always claim that they can't find the right applicants, that the applicants don't measure up to the standard that they're supposed to have, and so forth. And they just drag their feet, that's all. This is always true of, I suppose it's true of private corporations, certainly true of government. A mayor, a governor, a president has to issue 1,000 orders, and if the one to whom the order is issued really doesn't think it's too good an order and doesn't think the one issuing it is going to be too observant to see whether or not it's carried out, it frequently isn't going to be carried out. Mm-hmm. You got to remember one thing, too, in the city of Detroit has the great tradition of civil service, and I use that as somewhat sarcastically, I assure you. And the civil servant's attitude is, mayors come and mayors go, but we're going to be here long after this one's gone.
Right.
And I don't like his program, and I'm just not going to push that sort of thing. And they don't. Uh-huh. It's very difficult to get some of these things through civil service. People think civil service is great, but I think any mayor could accomplish an awful lot more if he could appoint more people and not be stuck with the people who are there under civil service in many instances. I used to advocate the idea that, all right, let civil service do the hiring, but let the mayor be able to discharge people if he feels they're not doing the job. And let the civil service replace them, so the mayor's never going to appoint his friends if that's what you're trying to accomplish, but at least you get rid of the incompetent people.
So there'd be a balance.
Yeah.
The mayor overwhelmingly is reelected in November of 1965. His star apparently is rising. And then the 1967 riot comes along. It's not necessary for us to get into all of the details of the riot. We've talked about it some already. It has been written about extensively. Perhaps one issue we could cover, however, given this opportunity, do you think that there have been any popular misconceptions about that riot, either how it started, how it was dealt with, how it was wrapped up, that you've ever felt needs to be clarified in the public record?
No, I can't say that. We certainly know how it started. And I suppose the things should have been handled far differently than it was when it started. Had it been handled in a better fashion, maybe it would have been kept on a much smaller scale. And the reaction of the governor, namely Romney, I think was incorrect against Jerry's urging to do something about it.
Was this entirely political in your estimation?
Yes.
What was Mr. Romney trying to accomplish or not accomplish?
Well, whatever his own reasons were, of course, I have no idea, but he did not want to be put in a position of calling on President Johnson to send in troops.
Mm-hmm.
And things were badly out of control, and he needed the troops.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely enough, as I think we mentioned, in face of Jerry's urging that he asked for the troops, he was later to say that he was caught, what was it, between a indecisive mayor and I forget the rest of it, but he tried to blame it all on Jerry for not having taken the action, and here's Jerry, who was right on television with the whole thing tape recorded, with their sitting there looking right at the people and saying the words, Jerry urging them to call on the president to send the troops in, and Romney vacillating back and forth.
How was Mr. Kavanaugh reacting as literally his city was blowing up around him?
Well, during those particular days, Jerry stayed almost exclusively over at police headquarters, and we didn't see him much. I think I only saw him a couple of times until the riot essentially was over. I believe on Thursday he was in the mayor's office rather than at police headquarters. Well, he was pretty grim, but he wasn't running around hollering and waving his arms. He was his usual calm self and making judgments about what we should do, and he was making judgments already about trying to restore the city. He and Walter Reuther had a conversation that morning, if I remember. I think I may have the wrong date, but I think it was right then, about getting help from UAW to clean up the city.
Was the mayor shocked, surprised?
No, I think I told you that he was not shocked and surprised, contrary to what many people have alleged, because he had told me in advance that Detroit could blow up. I can't remember whether it's after the Watts riot, it probably was, that we were talking about this one day. And in fact, it was in a conversation about the Senate campaign, because he said, things can happen here. He said, right now, I've come off a recent election. My popularity is high. But we could have a riot in this city because the potential is there for it. And if that were to happen, that would put me in a much different position in the eyes of the public than I am now. He was aware it could happen. He was concerned that it might happen. But even so-called black leadership felt it was not likely to happen here, because there was a feeling among many black people that Detroit was one of the cities that was more aware of black concerns than any others, and they had a very good relationship with Jerry Kavanaugh.
What was the interaction between the mayor and President Johnson during these days?
I was not with Jerry, so I can't say.
Okay. No, I'm just curious, you mentioned that he and Johnson had a very close relationship.
Right, but I have no idea if they exchanged phone calls during that time or not. And if I did know at the time, I don't recall.
Okay. Were there any particular black leaders the mayor was trying to work with during the riot to try to quell things? Horace Sheffield, for example, who was an old ally.
Horace Sheffield and some of the ministers prominent in the black community at that time, and there were others. I'm trying to remember which other ones he might have been speaking to try and regroup the city, let's say. There was a, none of the names slide out. No, I can't recall the names. There's a ministerial group that he worked with. Is it the Ministers Alliance? But I'm trying to think I'm not sure that was the one. There were several various groups of black ministers.
I'm sure a lot of that's in the written record as well.
I can't help you out on that.
Following the riot, is it correct to assume that the mayor's relationship with the black community changed? Was it any more tense? Did the mayor himself feel differently about the black community in any way after the riots?
No, not at all. I would say the relationship was somewhat different in that the black community, having seen the effects of the riot, was determined that they were going to get the various rights they felt that they had been withheld from them. So there was a lot of urging that things be done, and blacks spoke more militantly, but so did whites at that time. Remember, there were two things going on. You also had the Vietnam situation,
right,
which was causing all kinds of unrest, particularly among young white people. So there was so much tension in the city, in spite of the fact that Jerry was an open advocate of getting out of Vietnam, which caused him to break his relationship with President Johnson. Johnson was very upset with Jerry for having taken publicly such a position. And, so I think there was more tension generated over that issue at the time than there was over the fact that the riot that had been going on. There was considerable effort, however, to, as I mentioned, sort of regroup in the city, and a big plan was developed under Richard Strickhart's about what could be done to, particularly in the areas that had been badly hurt by the riot. Gratiot, Jefferson, Mack, 12th Street, Linwood, and the like, and how commercial developments might be started in those areas, and better community relations and so forth. And of course, New Detroit was organized. So there were a lot of very positive efforts, many of which did not really materialize as had been hoped, because instead of all of the new commercial developments in the areas that were hurt, some of those areas just continued to deteriorate. 12th Street did draw some, and Linwood did see some improvements, certainly 12th Street, where there were shopping centers and so forth, built up. But commercial development was stagnant for a while, and in some areas still has.
Were there obvious reasons for that, or other reasons?
Well, and just a lot of the merchants were afraid to do business in the area after the riot. They lost heavily. Furniture stores were particularly subject to burning and looting, and maybe deservedly so, because they were selling schlock furniture in many instances at outrageous prices. And I think during the riot, a lot of the records about people who owed money in the various insurance companies went up in flames.
Do you think that, or did the mayor think, that, as far as you know, that Detroit's business community, financial community, responded to the extent they should have?
No, they didn't respond to the extent he felt they should. They did respond. And there were some of them really stepped forward. But he felt that there was a lot more time given in words than in anything else. Of course, you can't blame everybody for not coming up with all the money to handle all of these things. They've got their own concerns. But
very often, analysts point to the fact that Henry Ford, Ford Motor Company, did a lot to try to rebuild Detroit, the Renaissance Center being an example there, and the Ford Corporation and the Ford family's involvement in that. But many analysts question whether General Motors and Chrysler did as much as they could have, considering the fact that they are based here. Was there any particular reason why Ford should have stepped forward more than General Motors or Chrysler?
Because Ford was Henry Ford. You had one man who could really do the moving and shaking, and he did. Also, Mrs. Ford, his mother, I refer to her, was very civic conscious. The two of them were, I think, tremendous help in the city of Detroit. Henry Ford, really gave a lot of effort to this city and deserves a lot of tribute for what he did, and to my mind has never received all the recognition as much as he has received that he deserved for all that he did.
Can you give some examples?
Well, take the Wren Center itself, which was a tremendous endeavor and one that wouldn't have gone forward except for him personally. He, to all everything I understood, was actually on the phone himself working to bring people in, to raise the money, to get travel around looking for what he could hope to find the best architect to design the building, and this was something he conceived and he promoted, as I understand it, and I think he deserved a tremendous amount of credit for it. And they had other things the family did, such as the Ford Auditorium and the money and effort they gave to the Institute of Arts. Things like that. They've done an awful lot for this city. The General Motors people, to my mind, and I can't speak with authority on this, but I've never been aware of their presence in those things to anywhere near the same extent. But again, General Motors is not, there's nobody at General Motors who's a Henry Ford. Mm-hmm. And as big as the top men are at General Motors, and as important as they are, I don't think they ever had the community clout mm-hmm. that Henry Ford had. Mm-hmm. And Chrysler always had its own problems. And they too, like General Motors, never had anybody who was able to put that much pressure on, I would assume. There was a fellow named John Leary at Ford, or pardon me, at Chrysler, who was very close to Jerry and did everything he could to help in the business community. He was a tremendous man, too, but he didn't have the clout that Henry Ford had, of course. But he was very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. Chrysler always was trying to be helpful during mm-hmm. Jerry's administration.
But their resources were rather limited, yeah, is that what you're saying? And if I understand what you're saying correctly, General Motors has always assumed a certain corporate aloofness.
Yes.
There are certain individuals associated with General Motors, however, very prominent names in Detroit's history, the Fishers, for example.
True, but the Fishers were... The Fisher brothers weren't